This is fresh air. The Sundance Festival gave it thumbs up, but conservative Christian lobby groups are giving it a thumbs down. The film is Poison. It won the top prize at the 1991 Sundance Film Festival. Now it's the latest focus of controversy surrounding NEA funding of the arts. The Reverend Donald Wildman of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, condemned Poison for scenes he described as explicit pornography. And the Reverend Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition demanded that the head of the National Endowment for the Arts resign because his agency helped fund the film. My guest is the writer and director of the film, Todd Haynes. Poison is a movie about deviance and transgression. There are three separate interwoven stories. The section titled Homo is inspired by the writings of Jean Genet. Hero is done in the style of a documentary, and Horror is a spoof of 1950s horror films. In Horror, a scientist discovers the hormone at the root of the sex drive. He accidentally drinks the potion and is transformed into a leper with oozing, crusty skin. This is the scene where he first discovers the sex drive hormone.
Putrefacted condensation sustained, allowing molecular coagulation by producing biomagnetic gas. I did it. I did it!
Dr. Graves?
Yes, I'm Dr. Graves. And I've just captured the sex drive.
Oh, that's marvelous. It means the molecular coagulation theory holds true.
Molecular coag... How do you know that? Who are you?
I'm Dr. Olson.
Todd Haynes, why did you want to use this send-up of 50s horror films to explore the theme of deviance?
Well, in the horror section, I was very self-consciously trying to construct a story that we associate as a very, you know, popular genre. And in this way, I was really saying this is society speaking to us about deviance and sort of trying to find its appropriate place. I was really struck when I was looking back at those films from the late 50s, early 60s, at how incredibly moralistic they were, and often were sort of thinly disguised constructs for dealing with social problems of the time, such as, you know, the threat of communism or juvenile delinquency or UFOs or whatever was sort of upsetting the status quo at that period. And I found that what these narratives often would do was both sort of explore and the excitement of that deviance or that threat, but very safely put it in its place at the end. And it reminded me a great deal of the way AIDS was being depicted by media, both journalistically and in narratives, during, you know, this whole past decade.
Let me play a clip from the final part of the trilogy. This is the part of the trilogy that I think is closest to deriving from Jean Genet.
Right.
And this is about a man in prison who becomes sexually obsessed with a new inmate. And this is a clip from this man's early days in prison when he's still a young man.
By the time I was 16 years old, I was notorious as a kid with a terrific knack for theft. Foster homes would no longer take me, and I was sent to the boys' reformatory of Baton. There, in the counterfeit world of men among men, I found my true family. At Baton, I was astounded by the discovery that each male had a male of his own, and that the world of force and manly beauty loved in that way within itself, from link to link.
The other parts of the trilogy are kind of funny in their own way. They're parodies. This is the part that's very serious. It's the part that's done with the most lyricism, although it's the one that's most about brutal love and about a life shut off in prison. Tell me what you're getting at with this part of the trilogy.
Well, unlike the first two stories, as you point out, the homo section, as it's subtitled in the credits, is the first story that sets out from the beginning. It comes directly from the point of view of the person who's been ousted by his society, and the voiceover narration that's the example that that you just played runs throughout that story. So we're much more involved with the subjectivity of somebody who's really on the outside. It's very, very different perspective. And I really wanted to, you know, explore some homosexual love that's under some very strict barriers and watch the ways that it comes out. But what was important to me was to construct a story where I think the desire between the two men is something that is accessible and something that one invests in, whether or not they're a gay viewer or a straight viewer or whatever, that there's something very powerful and liberating about that desire. But the conditions in which that desire exists in prison and fully restricted environment forces that out in ways that are violent and brutal. And again, I'm speaking, you know, I think about conditions that we all experience, again, whether we're gay or not, where sometimes desire or love comes out in ways that are painful, and that if the world was different, then maybe it would come out in different ways.
My guest is Todd Haynes. His new film, Poison, won the top prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is filmmaker Todd Haynes. What was the effect that Jean Genet had on you when you first read him?
I was first just struck with his his lyricism, the quality of his writing, of his prose.
And we should say here that he spends a lot of time in prison himself.
Yes.
And his writing has that kind of lyrical brutality that you're getting at in the movie.
Yeah, definitely. And I should say that Poison, I think, is inspired more by Genet's novels, which are markedly different, I think, in their subject matter and in their style than his plays. And in some ways, he's more well-known for his plays that he wrote after he was out of prison. But I think in many ways, Genet the figure and his very much his political position as a gay man was probably the thing that inspired me the most throughout the making of this film. He always, to me, stood as a very extreme position of negation, of one in which, you know, he rejected the world or tried as fully to reject the world as he possibly could, and was never interested or invested in an identity as a gay person where you were trying to find your sort of niche in society and an accepted place where society would embrace you and give you its little corner like everybody else. I think what was fundamentally transgressive about homosexuality was what interested Genet in it the most and what he really stood for. And I find that to be a really important position to remember, especially in the wake of the AIDS epidemic, when a very defensive and sort of fearful position among gay people was being, you know, expressed. And that just made me feel terrible that people would have to feel like we have to clean up our act and not be threatening and not be, you know, not be what we are in some ways, which is definitely, a threat to the status quo, something very, very different from the basic laws and rules that we're raised in this society. And I think Genet really, you know, stood up for that, for what was different about being gay.
It's the part of the story that we're talking about now, the part directly inspired by Genet, the part you've called homo, that's been most controversial. Donald Wildman of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, has condemned your movie because it quote, includes explicit porno scenes of homosexuals involved in anal sex, unquote. Did I miss something? There didn't seem to be anything really explicit there. I mean, there is a scene of two men having sex, and you see them from the waist up. And as I recall, they're wearing shirts.
Yeah. No, it's completely inaccurate. And he admits that he has never seen the film, and he's basing his allocations on a Variety review of the film, which, although it was a very positive review, also kind of misrepresented the way the sex is depicted in Poison and made it sound a lot more dangerous and hardcore than it is. It doesn't even approach the kind of scenes that we see typically in R-rated films out of Hollywood.
Has it been, on some level, for you interesting to think about what Donald Wildman would experience if he actually did see your movie? I mean, this is a movie, that identifies with marginalization and with deviance, which is exactly the opposite of what he stands for.
Yeah.
It's really not a mainstream movie
at all.
You know, if it wasn't for this controversy, very few people would even know about the movie, I think. So what do you think about when you think about the chances of him actually seeing your film?
Well, you know, the fact that Jesse Helms went to see it at a press screening.
Oh, he did.
At a screening for congressmen and senators last week, or I think it was the beginning of this week in Washington, and other such people from various fundamentalist groups, Baptist-related groups, have seen the film. And there's been a sort of regular reportage in the Washington Times about it, amusing reactions, such as one woman saw the film and claimed that it was so dangerous and disturbing. I think it's the same person who said the film is dangerous because it's so artistic, that it's the fact that it's made with such an artistry makes it extremely dangerous. But I think the same woman said she felt like bathing in Clorox after she saw the film. So, yes, these are not the kinds of people that I think the film is really in some ways, it's precisely the people the film is speaking to. But in other ways, I think stylistically and formally it's really not intended for that audience. So the controversy that has certainly made the film, like in certain circles, headline news, which we never, ever anticipated, I think is somewhat of a mixed blessing. Definitely more people will see the film and hear about it. But many people for whom the film was really not made will be looking at it under very sort of with a very specific thing in mind, you know.
As you know, as we've described the controversial scene of the two men having sex, I mean, you don't see anything explicit at all. You made a decision to do it that way. I mean, you could have shown a lot more than you did. Obviously, you didn't want to, and I'm curious to hear why.
Well, that particular scene, which is a rape scene toward the end of the film, is. I think it's a disturbing and complicated scene, and I think what's really happening is happening on their faces. I mean, that's really what's going on in the scene is in the faces of the two actors in really powerful performances. You don't need to see anything more. It's all there, and I think sometimes doing a simpler thing is stronger and more effective. There are scenes where you see other scenes, a flashback scene in the childhood reformatory where you see two boys engaged in sex and you see someone's exposed rear on top of another boy, and you know it's sexier. The scene where the two inmates are sleeping next to each other, and one of them is sort of exploring the other. It's sexy, and we didn't really hold back. And I think that it's not at all pornographic in any way. But I wanted to have it be arousing and exciting, and maybe something that you don't usually see. But I never felt that we were holding back or that we were making tasteful choices. I've had to use that kind of horrible word now to redeem the film, you know, here and there. But it wasn't a criteria that we imposed on ourselves at all when we were doing it.
You know, the one of the scenes in a way that I think you've made the most erotic is where one man is showing another man his scars, scars on his chest.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's a really, really erotic and beautiful scene. And the two performances I think would carry it. It's really, you know, I mean, sometimes just an actor can be erotic in his eyes. You know, there's ways that it doesn't have to be, you know, graphic to turn you on. There's ways that withholding that is even more powerful.
You obviously grew up watching a lot of genre movies and probably watching a lot of television.
Right.
Which is for the most part very, very mainstream. I'm wondering if you, when you were young, found a literature that spoke to the kind of marginalization that I imagine at some point of your life you felt yourself.
Well, actually, I think you always see that in the mainstream. I mean, I think I found incidents of marginalization or subversion or transgression in mainstream work, and I think it's always there. It's like always sort of the shadow beneath the status quo or the mainstream position. Hitchcock is an amazing example of someone who is incredibly popular and is a household word, but his films are incredibly complex and at times incredibly perverse. And the sort of positions that I think he puts his viewers through as you watch a Hitchcock film are often incredibly subversive.
I mean, because you find yourself identifying with the killer and trying to figure out how to make this body die.
Yeah, or just complicit in the whole what is ultimately criminal about even watching, about looking, about seeing things that you're not supposed to see, or how you're ultimately made guilty, or you're a participant in some sort of guilt just by nature of watching. And sitting in the dark theater watching this film becomes a sort of second metaphor for that whole process, let alone the person who's in the film watching a woman or watching a criminal act and ultimately getting involved in it. I think Hitchcock loved to, his central protagonists are always these people who are accidentally stumble into something that all of a sudden they become guilty for when they really are innocent. And it's almost like just by nature of looking or just by nature of experiencing the world, we are made complicit in it. And, I think that's what you do when you watch a movie.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Todd Haynes' new film, Poison, has just opened in New York, and it will open in the rest of the country throughout the spring and summer. This is Fresh Air.